Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality, and is about discovering your place in this great universe, from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life, and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today. Today, we are going to be talking about something rather interesting, as I would call it. You know, we all have things that there's books out there, movies out there, and it's all science fiction. Heck, I grew up in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and I remember science fiction, that was really that winged out stuff. You didn't know where it came from. It was really in comic books then, and then people were starting to put it into books. And what we find decades later, we go back to some of those books and we say, yikes, that came true. This, maybe that's on the forefront. What is really going on? And what I like to say is it people who are maybe having things in their intuition? They have the courage to be able to put it down on paper, and when they do that, it just shows up later. So maybe people see things maybe decades before they might appear, maybe just weeks or days. You just never know. And I think that's important to talk about because, as we notice, with a lot of the awakening, a lot of the changes in the world these days, seems like the world is going faster and faster these days. What I have noticed is that the movies, how about the movies that are coming out? They just seem to be not so far-fetched anymore. How about the news? You'll see have previews of like the next upcoming season of brand new TV shows, and you go, oh, that seems a little out there. You know, that's in January or whatever. Comes to January, you would say, gosh, we were just talking about that the other day. So really, are things that far-fetched? Are they out there? Or are they really just occurring maybe in a similar parallel universe? Hey, maybe we're just tapping into it. Who knows these days? All we know is listen, have fun with it, do what you need to do. If you need to prepare, if you need to just listen and let it pass through your consciousness, hey, it might even take away some of that grand old fear that we all know. Today my guest is J.K. Milliken, and we're going to be talking about this because he's had several books that he has written about that are sci-fi books, and, you know, I'll let him share. He has a lot of experience and these great books, and when we talk about them, we say, is that really there, or should we be worried about it? He has a book, it's called A Darker Shade of Justice, which he will be talking about today. And he also has another book, it's called The Aftermath, A Guide for Survival. So J.K., thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, I'm thankful to have you talk to me today about my books.
I'll tell you, what do you think about what I just said? That seems like a whole mouthful, huh?
Yeah, yes, it did, but it's a lot of truth in what you were saying there. The world is a different place, and as you said before, the old sci-fi genre, a lot of stuff in those books actually have come true.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Some people will say, as I've noticed, you know, as I always go back to, we think about the 70s and what we knew was what just came up on the television, or what we, quote, knew was what came up in the magazines that were starting to come out then, or what you read in books in the library. And those books in the library, you know, they could be there for decades, or, you know, how long have they been there? And every time we wanted to find out about something, we always went to the library and pulled something out of a book, and we would say, that must be the way it is. And we were always referencing the past. And now with this explosion of the internet, we are now referencing the future, and that is a whole different concept because we're tapped into everything at lightning speed. What are your thoughts?
Well, one of the reasons I wrote the book, The Aftermath, A Guide to for Survival, is that I'm actually a sensitive, and I sense something happening in the near future here. And also I have a person I use as a communication vessel. It's a lady I know in England, and she tells me about her dreams and stuff. And the odd thing is, it's the reason I wrote my book, but my sister also had a similar dream as well. So, yes, the future is unwritten, but something is going to happen.
And you know what? I can honestly say, you know, I had gone through Hurricane Katrina because I was not able to evacuate. And I will honestly say there was a period of time everybody else in the house, everybody all around us had evacuated. And we didn't, and everybody in my apartment was sleeping. And this was like in the wee hours of the morning. And I can remember something sensed to me. It like shook the chair I was sitting in, and I kind of like toppled over. And I kind of was sensing, okay, what was up with that? And I went out and looked, it cracked through the window to be able to look out of the blinds, and it was really strong, the storm. And then I had another sense to go to the door to the outside and put my hand on it. You know, I put my hand on it and I could feel all of this tremendous, tremendous violent stress and pressure in it. And I put my other hand on the doorknob. And I almost had, almost something had drawn me to feel the power. And something else in me was sensing to open the door. And all of a sudden, both of my hands popped off, and I went, ooh, that's not a good thing. And I kind of went back. And I think back on that often, because when we think about disasters and we think about dangerous things coming up or whatever, there's something that always draws us in. There's something always that we see and we sense it. But all of a sudden we know, ooh, that's not a good thing, and we kind of like turn around. So when people say they're sensing things, that's kind of what you're doing. You're dipping your toe into the pot, and then you're saying, no, I don't think so.
Well, yes, I agree with that because, you know, a lot of people sense things, but they don't act on what they sense. They don't believe in themselves enough to say, hey, wait a minute. There's something going on here. I need to pay attention to what this is. Mm-hmm. And people tend to ignore that fact. Because people, a lot of people don't really believe in intuitiveness or psychic abilities and things of that nature.
Yeah, and you know, I think what that was incredible is that I sensed that the power of it, that it could do damage, but I also sensed that I was safe. And that kind of settled down in me. And when I look back on it, probably not a good place to be, but I think I could weather another hurricane again, although I don't want to, I could. Just to know that, you know, the energies will be what they will be, you know. And tell us a little bit more about your history, because how did you come across being able to write sci-fi books, but also, you know, what in your background drew you there?
Well, actually, my background, I have a military background. I spent 20 years in the military, so I saw things there, but over the years, you know, I watched, you know, television and lots of movies and read a lot of different books. And the stuff just kind of came to me and says, hey, I'll write a book about it. So I did.
And can you share a little bit about your books? That would be wonderful.
Sure. The first book that I wrote is called Twisted Sci-Fi and Post-Apocalyptic Tales. Some of the stories in that book, I take an old story like the vampires and werewolves and turn them into like alien type creatures. And it gives a whole different spin on that story.
Interesting.
And yeah, it is. And then my second book that I actually wrote a detective book, and I really fell in love with my detective. So it's kind of, I live inside my own books. And that actually helps me write a little bit better because I put myself into their characters and their losses and their sadness and their great moments. And but the reason I wrote my third book is because of something I've sensed. And as I said before, I have a vessel that I stay in contact with, and I also talked to Jamie Clark about it as well, and he agrees with what my feeling is. And there is something coming. So I said, well, maybe I should write a type of survival book that people can actually use while they survive in their homes.
Right. You know, I think it's so interesting when people talk about survival, because I will tell you, if there was another Hurricane Katrina again in my area, which is here in New Orleans, what I would do is I would never go back to the same area again. I would say, people, give it up, bulldoze it all down, and go live somewhere else. Because you don't want to be the only person that survives on that block. You don't want to be the one who comes back and has the only house that you're building up in that corner. Because, you know, that old concept, build it and they will come, it doesn't always work. And sometimes when they do come, it may or may not be the community of which you were always used to it prior to that, which is very important, because everybody says, oh, but things changed. It's come back, but it's not the same. It's come back, but it's different. Well, of course it is, because you've changed the energy dynamics. You've changed the people, the places, the history, the memories, the resemblance. You can't always bring that back. And I think that's so vitally important when we talk about, you know, natural disasters or earth events or, you know, whatever's going to come up in the world. And, you know, do you really, you know, want to think about that? I think that's really important to think about. We get people who are saying, well, I'm going to go dig this big hole out in the desert and I'm going to have my little house in there, and we're going to survive for 5 years. And then you think, when you come out, what the heck are you going to see when you come out? Everybody thinks about it as far as, well, I'm going to survive, but then they don't think, what am I surviving, and how can I go forward from that, you know?
Well, you know, that's the problem with survival. You have no idea what's coming your way.
Right.
You have no idea how long the disaster is going to last, whether it's short-term or a long-term thing. And you don't know what you're going to be facing once you come out of your survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really quite scary. And the key thing to survival is preparedness. That's the whole key to survival. But some people have told me, it says, well, if this happens, I don't want to be around. But that's
right.
Not in human nature. It's not in our nature to sit there and give up on ourselves. So people will survive. They will fight death. With every,
what we also think about, too, is that, like I said, about who's around you. Sometimes when something happens, we want to say we survive. You know, I can remember the many times we've had hurricanes, or many times, you know, I've been in different situations where I, quote, had to have things to be able to, you know, maybe eat for a week, eat for 6 months, whatever that might be, or, you know, be able to support myself for a certain period of time. And all of those times that I've done that, I think it was almost like an exercise for me, in which I would say, oh, I'll put all this together, and then the event would occur, and I would say, gosh, I should have had that, or I should have had that. Oh, I really didn't need this, or wasn't it silly that I thought this thing was so important? So really, in our preparation time, when we talk about these events, we say, this is what you need, but we're really basing it upon that which we are living today. So in other words, if you're a type of person who would say, oh, well, I have to have enough batteries because my kids want to use their machines, you know, and we'll get all these things that you can wind up and it'll charge our systems and everything. You know, it's so funny, we don't even think about it. Would we really want to have all these batteries to be able to listen to the radio when there is no radio? Or do we really want to have a charcoal fire when charcoal can be all gone in 1 day or 2 days or 3 weeks? You know, and it's such a jump off the edge kind of thing I think really preparation, what it does is it's allowing you to say, I feel safe today because I have those things in preparation and still be able to live for today, rather than worrying, you know, when all of that runs out, then what do I do?
Well, yeah, the problem is with survival is there's no such thing as a perfect plan.
Yeah.
I always call these type of plans the 75%ers, because there's always 25% of things you're going to either forget or you don't need.
Right.
And one of the things I do suggest, though, in a survival situation is things use batteries. You have rechargeable batteries, and you have a generator that charges batteries for you. So the batteries last longer, because if you got children in a type of disaster, they're going to need some type of diversionary stuff, you know, to keep them cheerful and happy and safe.
You know, it's funny. I always remember my own experiences, and I can reflect those out, and that's what I base my future, you know, survival things on, because I can remember when all of that, generators were done, when we didn't have electricity, when we had no refrigerators, we had nothing, food was very limited, and really our survival was based on, do you have a safe bed in an enclosed space to sleep tonight, and is the Red Cross going to come tomorrow around the block, and let's make sure we go out to get what they're serving us that day, and usually it was canned ravioli that they warmed up, you know, in a little kind of like Sterno thing. So, you know, people, you know, if you think that you feel uncomfortable, it's time to get what you think you need. And also to talk a little bit about your stories, because some people will say, oh, like myself, we've had those already. We've had a sci-fi event. It was crazy. You know, all of these things were happening. So really, if we've gone through life long enough in enough decades, I think we can look back and say, I would have never thought that situation would have arisen. And oh my gosh, look at how I dealt with it and look at where I am today. So it could be any phase of our life, something could happen, right? And you could write it into, it could seem preposterous to us, you know, in the future, but it really would end up being that we got through it.
Yeah, most of my stories are basically just, this creative by my own creativity,
mm-hmm.
and they're just similar to most other sci-fi stories.
Yeah.
This one I'll tell you about, which it's not in a, it's in my future book. It's called Three Shrunken Alien Heads.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it boils down to where this guy finds this interesting artifact while he's down in Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
And the woman who doesn't sell it to him, she just gives it to him. So he takes it, he's all happy, he's got this great looking souvenir and wears it around his neck. Well, while he's walking away, the old lady drops dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is he comes to realize that these things he's wearing around his neck is actually causing him to age very rapidly.
Wow.
And he runs into these three Jamaican guys while he's going to a coffee shop, and they're all going crazy, going in their native tongue, and he doesn't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of left the scene, but then he starts noticing these changes in his body, and he's starting to get older, and the doctor said, well, you look pretty good for someone 40 years old, and he's only 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes to realize that this thing's a curse, but the only way to get rid of this curse, you have to give the trinket to someone else.
Oh.
Well, his boss isn't so nice to him.
Wow.
And he's very greedy, and this all takes place in a big financial district there in Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, this thing has brought me luck. And he takes this guy to a racetrack, and he wants all kinds of bunch of money. So the guy wants the trinket. So the guy gives up the trinket. And then the the young guy stops aging, but unfortunately he's only aged like 20 years. He's got a body of a 45-year-old, a 50-year-old now.
Mm-hmm.
But the other guy starts taking in all that money, gets so greedy that he drives himself mad, he jumps out the window and dies. So, and that's basically the end of the story.
Goodness. And, you know, I think that's a great story. And what, how do you look at that?
Well, the thing is about a lot of my stories, something pops into my head. I go, oh, that's an interesting story. And I start writing about it.
Ah.
It's like I got a type of a guide. Just, okay, this is a good idea here. Talk about this stuff. And this morning I had an interesting epiphany, a very interesting epiphany, and it's actually going to be the basis of my next story that I'm going to be writing in my next sci-fi book. And what it is, you know, when people have near-death experiences,
mm-hmm.
a lot of these people say, well, they see this tunnel. So after all these years, you know, it's been mixing around in my head here, and all of a sudden, I says, wait a minute. So I said, well, look at a glass of water or a bowl of water.
Mm-hmm.
And everything here on Earth is basically pure energy. So when you drop a rock or coin, anything in that bowl of water, you're going to see concentric circles getting bigger, like
mm-hmm.
rings.
Mm-hmm.
So make that, stand that water up sideways, and people talk about the veil. After people die, they cross over the veil.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm thinking is that when you go through that veil, it has the same type of ripple effect that looks like a tunnel when you're having a near-death experience, and when in reality, it's just energy waves passing by you. I thought that was a very interesting epiphany. I go,
yeah.
That may explain those tunnels that people see during a near-death experience.
Right. Wow, interesting. That is, and you know, I think that what I find so glorious about the world these days is that I can honestly say since the internet, everybody has been feeling more free to share what they are thinking and what they're feeling. So in that way, it's allowing and it's expanding everyone's consciousness, but also allowing us to be more vulnerable and to be able to share. Like probably if you had said that maybe in the 60s or the 70s, you'd be locked up someplace by now, you know?
Well, for that, excuse me of using LSD.
yes, and that's so true. And I mean, you were there in those decades, so you know. I mean, you just couldn't say things like that. Or, you know, I mean, I used to work in a lot of those places in the 70s, and you know, you would hear people having conversations, you know, and you would go, "These people really make sense. I don't get why they're here," you know. Because maybe they made sense to me, but I'll tell you, when I checked out and punched out that day from work, I certainly didn't go home and say those guys at that place made sense, because I'd be the next one going in there, you know?
Yes, that's true.
And that is really honestly true. And, you know, when we look at it, we really have to think, too, about ourselves and where we live and the people we associate ourselves with, because that is so much easier. You're definitely in an area in which this is not looked down on. This is very, it's very open conversation. People are very interested, and it's just something to explore with our mind and our thoughts and our intuition. And that's a great place for you to be. However, I contrast it to a friend of mine who recently had had, he called it depression, where he was just getting overly excited, he said. He was getting really excited about a football game coming up. He had never gone to a football event, a game, and been in one of those big VIP things, and he couldn't wait. He was so excited. It was like something he's never done, and he's in his early 60s. Well, his family turned around and said, oh, you must be having a mental break, and your depression medications mustn't be working. And they checked him into a hospital. And he had to wait out a five-day mental hold because they said he was he seemed too over-anxious and too excited for them, and they felt for his safety. Well, of course, he never got to the game. Spent 5 days in the hospital lockup and then just went home to be further drugged. And I look at that and I go, wow, isn't that such a sharp contrast in this world, you know? And you think about it and you say, golly, I sure hope I'm not, you know, I don't want to be in one of those experiences, and you can pick and choose which one you don't want to be in. But the world is definitely so different these days. Don't you think so?
Well, people are actually more open-minded because the future is here, basically. And it's based on what they've seen in their lifetimes and their interactions with other people. And so they have learned and they've seen the trends that people are more open-minded. And like you said, You couldn't say these things in the 50s, 60s. I was accused of being a communist or just totally crazy.
Right. Yeah, look at it. You know, and you look at, people live in different areas of the country where they're not open-minded, and or they live in a family or, you know, a group of people together, and they're saying, that's not acceptable. You can't bring that information in here, and you just go, wow, right?
You know, a lot of times I say stuff like that, and people kind of look at me and go, is this guy crazy or what?
Yeah.
So I just kind of chuckle it off because people have their own opinions.
Yeah. And I think it's also, too, to note about the world being safe. Is the world safe? You know, you're safe to say it in your area. Other people are not safe to say it in their areas. So probably giving you some more food for your next book, huh?
Well, you kind of bring up an interesting point. There's certain things you can say here in the United States, but if you walk over to Iran or Iraq or Afghanistan, you're not allowed to say those. They'll stone you or they will behead you or whatever they're going to do to you. So we should be grateful that we have this type of free speech. But people don't realize to have the free speech, there's a cost involved here, and that's why we have the military.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about the military. I'll tell you, that's kind of something that, you know, I see military and government and all of that as something out there. I don't see it as I've ever interacted with anybody in the military. I've never been exposed to the concept that it was something that was a big deal or they needed to worry about, or even how it worked. You know, we look at people say, someone has said to me the other day, if you think that you have freedom in the U.S., you really don't. And these people were from Russia. And I just kind of went, oh, okay, you know. And I don't, we see a lot of postings that say, well, the government is affecting what we eat or drink or what we take as medicine or who we see as doctors or, you know, what we can say on the internet. There's a lot of that out there, and you just go, I don't really know. I don't know what the, quote, government or the, quote, military is. But yet, after Katrina, we surely found out what the military was. I've got, you know, hundreds of pictures. You can go up and down the street, and they're all over the place with those huge machine guns. One strapped on the front of you, one strapped on the back of them, you know, and they were patrolling, you know.
Well, it's hard to describe the military. When I was in the military, it was a little bit different. But people don't realize that if you're in the military, you actually give up a lot of your own freedoms by being in the military, even though you're defending the country to protect those freedoms. So the military can be like a bear, you know, you're just waiting for the wrong person to walk up on it. So, and it has its good points and stuff. I mean, I like the military, except for the last couple of years wasn't very good. But other than that, I actually love the military.
Well, how do you see in your books, you know, of course we think about Earth events or whatever. What would you see the military and how does it look to you? Or have you written much about it?
Well, basically, in some of my stories, I actually kind of talked about the military in the future and they get kind of wiped out because of the Holocaust and stuff like that. But they're still the good guys in the book. So, but the military has its good points and it has its bad points. And it's a lot of sacrifice involved when you're in the military, especially if you have a family and you have to get moved around. In a 20-year period, I moved around 11 times, different states. So it's a lot of sacrifice. And people don't understand. It's not just sacrifice of your life or limb in the military. It's sacrifice of your own life and your own family.
You know, I think sometimes people don't appreciate the people that are put in place in the world and what they're giving up or not giving up or what they've done to get to that position or not. You know, I relate it to physicians, you know. We all have some terrible stories about how they're absolutely the worst thing and sliced bread, but you know, hey, if they're the ones that are saving your derriere in the ER, then they're absolutely the greatest angel that's got wings, you know. And I think we can look at that also with the military, you know. Well, they're out there and they're going to overpower me and they're going to control me. But you know, after an event, maybe that's what you need is control, and they're going to put control back in to keep your derriere again safe, right?
Well, some control is good, and they need to have the strength in numbers, so we do have some control to protect people's lives. But you don't want the military to get too powerful because then it creates other problems.
Let's talk a little bit about, and we have a little bit more time here. Let's talk a little bit about your survival book. What are your thoughts on that? And how divide it up?
Well, the reason I wrote this book is because of something I sensed, but my friend Diane and my sister both verified in their own dreams that there is something coming, and then I went to Jamie with all this stuff. He says, yep, something's going to happen. And so I said, then maybe I should get this survival book out there. Now, the first five chapters of my survival book basically is what items you need, like medical stuff, baby stuff, and food items, and how much water you need. I did all those calculations so people can easily figure out what they need based on their family size. The other scenarios in the book are more for more informational, even though I put techniques about how to survive, like, for example, in the desert or on a deserted island or trying to cross a mountain. But the book's intended to be used as a companion book, to be used alongside other survival books. You should never depend on one survival book because you need something on your edible plants and non-edible plants. You need something about surviving different environments. So you need about two or three different survival books. And those, when you're trying to survive, you need to have them with you. Because if you get stuck in a jungle someplace, there's a lot of food out there, but if you eat the wrong plant, it's either going to make you ill or you're going to die. So you really have to know what you're eating.
And also to know the area in which you are. So many people have the claims of, you know, MREs, they're great. They last forever, you know, just stick those suckers in your garage, in a dry, cool place, and you're good to go. Not so, people. No. Depends where you live. I live in the deep south. MREs they gave out, if you read on the side of the box, you pull it up, it says, this product is good for this amount of time at this temperature. Well, we looked on there, and it was like 100 degrees, you know, 102 degrees around then. We looked on the side of the box. This is 102 degrees. This box is good for 24 hours. Yeah.
Wow,
okay.
Well,
you know?
You really have to be careful of what
yes.
you buy. Now, you can buy bulk foods at
yeah.
Like Costco or REI, Winco,
mm-hmm.
Walmart's, and some of these foods you buy can last up to 25 years if you buy the right type of foods.
Right. And it's
and
also about the temperature, but it's also about the temperature that is hugely key. And everybody says, oh, it's no big deal. I've got it in my house and the air conditioning is good. Your air conditioner just went out. Guess where your food supply is going? So it's really important to pay attention to what you've got where you're living. Because I think, as you said, about having 3 or 4 survival books, absolutely, it's about where you are living. You need to know it for where you are living. If you're in the Northeast, you can keep things a whole lot longer, you know. And even in the winter, you've got pretty good cooling systems, you know. Things are great. Something you might have preserved from the summer, you can still stretch it out more because you have cooler weather, you know, versus if you're in the southern states like Florida or something, that might not work. So you really don't know. You just really need to sense where you are, especially, you know, the desert. Definitely different things there, different plants, different ways you can keep yourself safe. You know, think of what is your biggest nemesis from where you live. Is it the cold? Is it the rain? Is it the heat? Is it dust? Is it pests? You know, and that's what you need to go by.
Right. You know, the good thing is, basically, my survival book will help you through. But like you're saying, different areas
yeah.
have different things that my book doesn't cover because you can't cover everything.
Right. Nobody can, yeah.
For example, I didn't cover hurricanes and earthquakes
right.
and floods and stuff like that because there's a lot of information already out there about those.
Mm-hmm.
So I went a step beyond that and said, well, this is what you're going to need for up to 2 years if you want to stay in your home and survive. But I also talked about two types of backpacks, your bug-out bag, which is basically a 72-hour emergency bag you take with you, and it's for short-term emergencies only. But they also talk about a long-term survival bag, which will help you survive wherever you're at for months, as long as you know how to use equipment. But the key thing is about all the survival stuff, everybody should take some type of either online class or go to a course at college or some type of program that's going to teach you all these basically survival techniques. People really need to learn these things.
Yeah, I'll tell you, because those that may or may not know, there will definitely be some clashes. And you just don't know what's going to happen. You just have to kind of take care of yourself, you know, move through your day and enjoy your life. I really think that's the major number one goal, you know. But if you're at the store and you see something and you're, you know, so inclined to pick it up, put it in your basket, pick it up, put it in your basket, store it in your closet, right?
That's a mistake people make, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell you, there's a lot of difference out there, what they're going to be able to do or not do.
Yeah, you got to plan for a rainy day or a disaster. And currently, because I live where I live, I can't really do all the stuff I need to do that's in my book, but hopefully next year when I get myself a house, I will be stocking up.
Right. Yep, it's definitely something, I'll tell you. You know, it's the funniest thing. I was cleaning out some cupboards the other day. And when you think about stockpiles, you know, I had some, we always every year in the summer, we usually May is the biggest month where you buy cans in the South. The stores always have a lot of sales on them because that's food that you don't normally eat in the summer is you don't normally eat cans. So they sell them all off, you know, in May. So in May, you pretty much pick up all your canned goods because if you have something event come along, like a hurricane, tornadoes, or whatever. You'll need all those cans to be able to eat your way through those events. And then I turned around one day and I said, I'm going to clean out all these cans because I really don't want them in the house because I'm not a can eater anymore. And I looked at them and some of the dates on those things are like 3 or 4 years ago. And I'm thinking, why did I ever have that? And then you can remember, oh, I had it because I had a fear that something was going to come up. So I put it in there and I never, ever did use it. So out went all of my stock. So it's definitely about rotating your stock because when you buy cans in the store, they usually last about a year. People think that they last a really long time and they really don't.
Yeah,
so do pay attention to that.
It depends on what you buy. You really got to read the labels to see how good they are. If, even if you have to, call the company and find out. They'll tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, it's definitely different when you start popping them open and they're like, oh, this is funky and it's not got to go in the garbage.
Yeah. So one of the key things to talk about my book is you should always have a 2-year water and food supply.
Yeah.
Always should have that, in regards of what you believe, what you think, or what people tell you, or what you hear on the news. You should always have a 2-year food and water supply. Because you have no clue how long the disaster is going to last and what the cause was.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, I've spoken to a few people of the West Coast, they said we've had a drought. So guess where all of our 2-year supply went? We've already used it. So people have used that as their event, and they've turned around and used their stockpiles.
Yeah, that's what happens. I mean, that's why you plan ahead. And you just don't really know how long something is really going to last. That California drought lasted for quite a while now.
Right.
And it's not gotten any better, and they get having all these fires, and they got to use water to put those things out and that chemical. So it's really difficult for California at this time.
Wow. Well, JK, we've come to the end of the show, and I just now realize it's time. Could you share a little bit more about how people could find out about you, and are your works online or anything? And if, you know, so people could check things out, that would be great.
Okay. Well, I'm on Facebook under JK Milliken and also LinkedIn under JK Milliken. And I will be posting stuff about my books here within towards the end of November to get the word out and all this stuff. And I have books, my first two books, well, I actually post three books, can be found on lulu.com, but they also could be found on Amazon.
Great.
And they are going out to a worldwide distribution, but that takes few weeks for that to happen. So their third book is on its way. The other two books have been out there for a few months.
Well, absolutely wonderful. I think people can check out on Facebook and find you and be able to follow you there because I'm sure you do postings and, you know, you never know what's coming up. Something might not be going on in your area, but it might be going on in another area and you can always raise the flag and say, hey, are you paying attention? Did you post up your water today? Or are you paying attention? Maybe it's something that we need to look at. I think, you know, by just connecting with you, they'll be able to find out more information. And I really thank you for being here today because a lot of people say, ah, that stuff in the future, that science fiction, that's never going to happen until one day the day goes top and then you're in that soup. So really do pay attention to what people like you are saying, you know, and say, well, it might be a possibility. So, hey, a few things I'm storing. There's no big deal. I'll be able to do that. So I really thank you for coming on today and shedding that light on the subject.
Well, thank you for having me, Dr. Gallagher. And one last thing, if people want to ask me any questions about survival, they can ask those questions and I'll get the answer for them.
Wow, that's great because a lot of people will say, I don't really know about that, and I'm back to Google City, you know. So if they can, do they post the questions to you on Facebook? Is that how you'd like it?
Either LinkedIn or Facebook, either way, or they can actually email me, at jkmilliken@yahoo.com.
Perfect. That would be absolutely wonderful.
And I will respond to any questions that you want to ask.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a pleasure to have you with us today.
Well, thank you again, Dr. Gallagher. I hope we do this again sometime.
Well, thank you. I'm sure we'll revisit it. So if you'd like to find out more information about J.K. Milliken, the link is on the bottom of today's show page. Click on there and you can go directly to his Facebook page. And you'll be able to find out more information as he posts it about his upcoming book, about any stories he has written and any thoughts he is having. And it's just great to be able to say, you know what, I don't get any of this stuff, but really cool, this sounds interesting and it's something I want to find out more about. The purpose of this show is to be able to turn around and say, sounds cool. What's it all about? And that's what we talk about here. So thank you so much for joining us today here on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's been a pleasure to be with you today. Thank you for today, and have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit www.drjeanettewellness.com to schedule a phone appointment today with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.